Today is Monday, July 18th, 2022. This is part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with David Mesh. David's last name is spelled M-E-C-H-E. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, David. How are you today?
Just good.
Good. David, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes.
Thank you. David, what year were you born?
1959.
And what year? I asked that already. Where were you born?
Ogdensburg, New York.
Can you spell that for me?
O-D-G-E-N-Berg. Oh, I gotta write it down. So.
B-U-R-G?
B-R-O-U-G. I ain't got no paper and pencil.
No worries. But, Ogdensburg. Okay.
Ogdensburg.
Great. New York. And what were your folks doing there?
My dad was working on a bridge.
Was he?
Yeah.
What bridge?
It was over St. Lawrence. I forget what bridge that was.
Okay. So you were born into the ironworking business right from day one?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a very... That job requires a lot of travel.
Yes, it does.
As a small child, did you travel from job to job with your father?
Yep.
Okay. Eventually, school's going to come along. Did you have any older brothers and sisters and younger brothers and sisters?
I got one brother and three sisters.
Okay. Where are you in that stack?
I'm at the back end.
Okay. You're the youngest.
I'm the last one.
Okay, you're the caboose. All right. How did you work out your schooling?
Wherever Dad was working at, that's where we went to school.
Okay. And what attracted you to ironworking? Was it because your dad was doing it?
When I was getting out of school, yes. Well, I worked during the summer, a lot about my age, and went out of the hall on a couple jobs, and then just started from there, I guess.
So let me make sure I get this right. So this was in high school, working summer jobs?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, between high school and being born in New York there when your dad was working on the St. Lawrence Bridge, what other bridges did he work on as you were growing up?
The Mackinac, Verrazano's, there's one over to St. Lawrence that did it. I forget. I should have asked Mom. She remembers all that stuff.
Okay. The Verrazano's Bridge, is that New York City? I'm trying to think. I've heard the name rings a bell. Yeah, New York City.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you get a chance to see your dad in operation on any of those jobs?
I remember New York. We'd go pick him up, and that was about it.
Okay.
And then when I got older, you know, he worked some refineries around home here.
Okay.
And he did work a couple bridges, you know, in this area.
Okay. So let's go to your first summer job as an iron worker. Where was that?
In this area, Lake Charles, Louisiana area.
Okay. Do you remember what you did?
I think it was a Butler building. You know, just a regular old building.
Okay.
We call them Butler buildings. That's who produced them.
How high were they?
Oh, it wasn't very high.
Okay.
15 foot, something like that.
Okay. And what was your job?
Whatever had to be done.
Okay. Okay.
We put up the framework and sheeted it. You know, if they had another job, we'd move on to it.
Okay. And then your second summer?
I worked offshore one summer.
Okay.
It was all field business.
Okay. So moving pipe?
It was a production platform.
Okay.
Where the old well came in and it separated all the, you know, the sand from the water and whatever.
Okay. And was that in Louisiana and in the Gulf Coast as well?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Then you graduated from high school what year?
In 78.
Okay. And you would have been 18 or 19?
Yeah.
Yeah. Had you thought about, you know, by the you were going to get out of high school and become an iron worker, or how did that work out?
I don't rightly recall.
Okay.
I know I had to go to work or get out the house.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I had to go to work or get out the house.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Did you go through an apprentice program?
No, I didn't. My dad showed me a lot of stuff.
Okay.
You know, just growing up.
Okay. So did he help you? Did he help you get your first iron job?
Yeah, he talked to a business manager and told me one day go down there and talk to a business agent, and started from there, I guess.
Great. Do you remember the job?
First job was, so I said it was a Butler building. It was a couple miles away from here, out in the country.
Okay. And you, is that the same sort of work that you'd already done the couple summers before?
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, what was your father's first name?
Howard.
Howard?
Harris.
Okay. All right. How long did you work for the building people?
It was just that summer.
Okay. And then where'd you go?
Went back to school.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So when you graduated in 78, where did you...
I went to... I worked right here, around the Lake Charles area.
Okay.
Texas, they had some the LNG plants were coming up back then, and it was across the river from the south of here. We put up these control rooms, and I think we're about finishing. And me and a good friend of mine now, Maurice Lanier and Scott Smith, we went to the powerhouse, and we had a strike or something. And then the outfit that had to do in the powerhouse asked a friend of mine, Maurice, to go to Florida on a job. And he got me to go with him. So we went to Crystal River, Florida.
Okay. What was that job?
Oh, the powerhouse was putting up the border.
Okay. What were you doing on that work?
I started out in the yard loading iron up for, you know, to send to the unit.
Okay.
Put up, then I got in a raising gang and started hanging on.
Okay. And that was in 78?
78. Yeah.
In the fall or winter of 78, 79?
Yeah.
Okay. So, was that a union job?
Yes.
Okay. So you were able to get in on the, and start working without going through the apprenticeship program?
When I got to Florida, I had a, several other guys that kind of took me under their wing, but one guy named Jesse Dean, he called around and he had to go take a test. And I flew to North Carolina and took a test and bought a book.
Okay. And did you pass?
Yeah, sure did.
Cool. So that got you a card, a union card then?
Correct.
Okay. All right, because, you know, I've been talking with Ronnie Mack, and, you know, Ronnie went through the two-year apprenticeship program.
Yeah.
And so that's all I know about how that can be done. That's neat. I mean, you had the skills, so you came in and just tested out.
Yeah.
Nice. So, tell me about that first job on the raising gang. How high did you go, and what were you doing?
In Florida, it was a powerhouse, and I forget how high it was, but we set all the iron in the boiler room and the turbine room, all that. That was a long time ago.
Okay, yeah. 1978. And then work out, let's see, 88, 98, 2008, 18. It's only 45 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm assuming that would have put you maybe 50 or 60 feet up in the air?
Oh, it was higher than that.
Okay.
It was. Most of those powerhouses are couple hundred foot.
Okay. And if I get this right, your job was to get the steel up, and then there would be a bolting crew coming in behind you.
Yeah.
Sorry?
I kind of boat took time. The connectors were put down up there, you know, the old framework, fill it in. And then the boat took gang comes right behind that, sticking all the bolts and up from up gang that from the building, and I start tightening all the bolts up.
Okay, so as the raising gang, you didn't have to do the plumbing to get the building square.
No, but it had to be plumbed to continue every tier.
Okay. Okay, so every tier would have to be plumbed before you put the iron on above that.
Well, it had to be plumbed to finish bolting up. I mean, we could probably set the iron, but they couldn't bolt it up and, you know, tighten it up. It had to be plumbed so you can continue every tier.
Okay. All right. I apologize for being so stupid about this, but
No, that's quite all right.
I appreciate your getting me straight on this. And there's, you know, talking to Ronnie, it sounded like there's three different types of ironwork. There's towers and buildings and bridges.
Yeah.
So this was your first building. This powerhouse. Once it was up, what did you do?
Went to the next job.
Where'd you go from there?
I was in Crystal River, and the outfit we was working for had a job in Follow Beach right below Tampa. So I went down there with them.
What was that one?
Another powerhouse.
Okay.
That was another thing, powerhouses, that company.
Okay, so were these, are these coal-fired power plants?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And did you ever get a chance to work one of these jobs with your father?
The one here at home I did. He ran the yard, and I worked in the yard for just a little bit. Then I went to the unit.
Okay.
Hang on.
Okay. And was it pretty easy? I mean, did it come easy to you working on these powerhouses?
After I got, you know, to knowing all the moves and that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In 1980, were you wearing a harness clipped in? Was there some safety for that, or were you all just? I hear a laugh there.
No, back then we just had a lanyard on a belt. There was no harnesses back then.
And was that lanyard hooked into something?
Maybe tied off to the iron or float or, no.
Okay. Well, that's good news. I mean, that way, at least if you slip, you would be kind of like a pendulum on your lanyard to your belt.
Yeah.
Clearly, that was not recommended.
Well, that's, you know, back then, that's the way it was, you know. They didn't have harnesses back then.
Yeah, okay. All right.
I think the tower guys had harnesses, but that was mainly for them to go up and down.
Okay. You know. Yeah, all right. So when did you move from structures to bridges?
I went out to Utah And when I left there, I came back home. That's when I should have got my resume out. I think I went down to New Orleans on the Greater New Orleans number 2 bridge.
Okay, the Greater New Orleans number 2 bridge. Well, let's back up for a minute. You mentioned working in Utah. What were you doing there?
Another time.
Okay. Was that your first time out west?
Yes.
And you remember roughly the year? Was that in the early 80s or when was that?
I was end of 83.
Okay. And then the Greater New Orleans number 2 bridge. What kind of bridge is that?
It's a cantilever.
Okay. Were there big differences that you found between buildings and bridges?
Yeah.
Like what?
On the bridges, you got maybe a handful of laborers, operators, and non-workers. On a pilot, you have all kinds of things. You know, pot setters, laborers, all kinds.
Okay. So I'm just to make sure that I clearly get that. There's a smaller crew building the bridge.
I guess you'd say that.
Okay.
I mean, you got quite a few iron workers, but you don't have as many crafts working on.
Right.
At one time, anyway.
Electricians and plumbers and carpenters,
okay.
And.
They come kind of after all the iron work is done.
Yeah.
They have a handful during that, but not very many.
Okay. And did you enjoy that first bridge?
Oh, yeah. Sure did.
How long were you on it, on the job?
I can't remember that part.
Okay. And do you remember the company that you were working for on that job?
Beasley.
Okay.
John F. Beasley.
John F. Beasley, Beasley, Construction, out of Oklahoma, is that right?
There's an office in Oklahoma, and there's, I don't know if it was still open back then, but Woodcliffe, Kentucky was where we, I guess.
Okay.
The bridge division out of. That yard set up right there on the Mississippi River.
Okay. And Ronnie Mack was working for Beasley.
Yeah, I think he worked under the Ohio office up there. I think he was working for the Runyons quite a bit. I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
You know, just another division of Beasley.
And it sounded like they were a big company.
They were at one time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I know they had some of the biggest water plants for bridges, you know, for a while, and the heaviest false work any bridge company ever had.
Okay. So after the Greater New Orleans, do you remember some of the other bridges that you worked on?
I worked on Louisiana, Platte Springs. That was for Baker too. Natchez. I did some couple of ones down there in Fort Lauderdale over the New River.
Okay.
Did a bunch of overpasses up in New Jersey. And New York. Did one of those Cattaraugus Creek. That's on the western side of New York.
Okay.
South Carolina. Cooper River.
Okay.
Did a couple of rehabs down there too. And South Carolina.
So all over the East Coast then, all over the eastern part of the states.
Yeah.
Okay. How did you meet Ed Kent?
From that right in New Orleans, Chicago. He was a superintendent when I got there. And I forgot how long he stayed, but they moved him up to West Virginia or somewhere up there. John L. Sullivan took over Greater New Orleans.
So Ed was working for Beasley and they moved him up?
Yeah, sent him to another job in, I think it was in West Virginia, or not quite sure.
Okay. And what do you remember your first recollections of Ed?
A long tall drink of water. He's the only man I could stand flat footed and put his right leg in back of that pickup truck and stand there and carry on a conversation.
Wow. So he would put his foot up on the bed of the truck. He was that tall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he would have been, well, was he your father's age or was he younger than your dad?
He was younger.
Okay. But he was older than you.
Yeah, I think he was, I want to say 11 or, if I remember right, 11 or 12 years older.
Okay. All right.
But he'd get out there and work right alongside you, I know that.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So you met him there at the New Orleans Bridge, and then he headed out. When did you run into him again, do you remember?
In South Carolina. Not Cooper River Bridge.
Okay. Was he the foreman there?
He was the superintendent.
Superintendent, thank you. Okay. On the Cooper River, all right. And that Do you roughly remember what year that was?
I want to say around 90, 91.
Okay.
Sometime now.
All right. So this is just 3 years or so before the Navajo Bridge there at Marble Canyon.
Sounds right.
Okay. And was that fun working for Ed there in South Carolina?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember about how long you were on that job, Cooper River?
Not quite sure.
Okay. All right. And then when that bridge was done, where did you go from there?
Have to get back to you on that one.
Okay. Because you're going to end up at Marble Canyon. Maybe we should just jump over there. Did Ed ask you to come out with him to the Marble Canyon job? How did you find out about that job?
I think I got a call from Jerry Rollins about going out there.
And who was Jerry?
Jay. Jay Rollins. He's the one that we all worked for with Beasley. I guess he's the one that got the jobs. He ran the yard up there in Wycliffe.
Okay. So he was looking for people to go out and work this job.
Yeah.
Okay. I get confused because the company named Trailer, TRAYLER, I think. They get credit for that build, but it sounds like
they did build that. Beasley had just sold to them, I think.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That makes a lot of sense because I was like, Ronnie worked for Beasley, and Ed worked for Beasley, and you worked for Beasley, and suddenly there's Trailer, and I was like, how did that happen? Okay.
Yeah, Jay got the job. He did all the bidding with Beasley, so he knew what was involved in it. So.
Okay. All right. Okay. And did you know that Ed was going to be out there?
I guess Jay told me he was out there, so.
Okay.
That's all.
And by this time, by 93, early 94, had you worked with Ronnie Mack already?
No.
Okay. Okay, so Marble Canyon was going to be the first time you were going to work with Ronnie. Okay. And but you knew Ed.
Yeah.
Okay. And what was your title on the job? Were you working as an iron worker, or were you doing something Something else.
I was a foreman.
Okay. All right. So as a foreman, I'm assuming you report to the superintendent.
Ed, yeah.
That would have been Ed. Okay. All right. And then the iron workers would report to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we had another foreman there, Ed Cross.
How'd you spell Ed's last name?
Cross. C-R-O-S-S.
Okay.
He was from Georgia, too. Same town Ed was brought up in.
Okay, and who was Ed working for?
For.
He was working for Trader, too?
Ed worked for Beasley, too. All them guys worked for Beasley for years.
Okay. All right, so that's what's getting me confused there. Because I keep hearing Beasley, and I keep seeing Trailer, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Do you remember your first view of the job out there? At Marble Canyon, do you remember what month you might have gotten out there to start?
I forget what month it was.
Had any steel been set before you got there?
No.
Okay. The foundation people, had they gotten in and done the skew backs in with the bolts out of the concrete there and the
four. They were still blasting.
They were still blasting. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, were they still blasting on the lodge side or the Fredonia side and the
the lodge side, from what I can remember, because they'd blow that horn, you know, and.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to stop them. Remember, they put a big old rubber mat down there, and it had this big wire of a cable mesh over the cutout in the canyon to stop, you know, all the rocks and all that from going down.
Right. Which
that
was
big old rubber mat. When they blow that dynamite, it'd jump up and down there, go in the canyon.
They were trying to keep the rock from going into the Colorado River below.
Correct.
And pull the rock up out of the canyon up above.
Right, they drop the pan down there and load up the rocks and run it to the top and use it for roadbed or whatever.
Okay. So on the Flagstaff side, when you showed up, was that all done?
The cutout was.
Okay. Had the concrete been laid yet for the skew back for the first plate there, the first the bolts down there?
No, I don't. I think they were working on the anchor bolts.
Okay.
Because. Yeah. Then we had to put in some tiebacks in there.
Right. So the tiebacks help to hold the. It's like building a big diving board. It's kind of the way I think about it. And the tiebacks help to keep the diving board from nosing down. Just kind of hold it back.
It held the. You know. It tied into the bridge, so it bolted to the cords. You know, it held it in place, and it had a jacking device built in it, so you could adjust.
Okay. So you called that a jack-in-the-box, and
jacking device.
And that would move the whole bridge up and down a little bit.
Yeah, in and out. And up and down.
Yeah, Ronnie had talked about that, and that just blew me away. You can actually point the thing upstream a little bit or downstream a little bit.
Yeah.
And up and down.
Okay.
So it was really, you could really direct that thing.
Yeah, it takes a little time, but it can be done.
Yeah, okay. The lodging out there wasn't a whole lot of places to stay.
No.
Where did you stay?
I stayed out there at the lodge for a little bit. And me and boat up foreman, and I might have been the operator, we moved in the Page kind of place over there. Then eventually the kids and them wanted to come out, so I found a trailer house to rent.
Oh, wow. So you brought out your wife and family?
Well, they just came for the summer.
Okay.
You know, but
that's pretty neat. They must have had a good time over at the lake there swimming.
Oh, yeah. Every day.
Nice. And Ronnie Mack talked about getting a place to stay out there in Page. Who was your bolt up foreman?
Ed Cross.
Okay. All right. And who was the operator? Do you remember?
Oh, Andy. He was a guy I'd worked with in Tennessee.
Okay, so Andy from Tennessee.
I think he was originally from Texas, but I worked with him in Tennessee.
Okay. Well, if you remember his last name, let me know. Yeah. Okay, so Andy's running the crane. Ed Cross is bolt up. Were you like the overall job foreman?
I was a resin gang foreman.
Okay. All right, so there's a raising gang foreman, and that's you, and a bolt-up foreman. Were there other crews as well?
No, just some two gangs there.
Just the two gangs, okay. Do you remember who was working for you on your gang?
It was all Indians except Ronnie Mack, I know that. Well, I had another boy from Baton Rouge that I worked with in Tennessee. He was there for a bit. Then I think he broke his ankle or something.
Oh.
Fell off the float.
Did he break his ankle there on the job or somewhere else?
Yeah, on the job.
Oh, no. How did that happen?
It was on that ski back down there. I'm not quite sure. Well, I don't really remember.
Okay.
But he didn't go that far, but he did break his foot or ankle.
Okay. Well, that's too bad. I'm trying to put together the names of the people who were doing this, and Ronnie helped me with Mike Charlie. He was a Navajo.
And there were some Begays.
Yep, Louis Begay.
Yeah.
And you remember anybody else?
I can see them, but I can't remember.
Okay. And did you, when you first got out there, kind of looked at the setting and looked at the river down there, 400 feet down, 400, almost 500 feet down, looked at the, it's like a 900 foot across. Was that going to be just another job for you, or did it kind of strike you right away as something kind of different?
First thing I said was, I bet when that first cowboy would come up to that edge, he was dying of thirst. How in the hell was he going to get down there and get a drink of water? Well, yeah, it was going to be different, for sure.
Nice. Do you remember where the steel came from?
I think it was Vincent, for sure.
And did they just send it out by semi, piece by piece?
Yeah. Trucked it all out there.
Okay. Were they coming out on a schedule? Would you get in touch with them, or would Ed get in touch with them and say, okay, send me more steel? How would that work out?
Yeah, Ed would. He'd order the steel, you know, tell them what he needed.
Okay.
When we needed.
Okay. So, let's go back to the tiebacks. What did you set for anchors for the tiebacks?
There was some I just remember the I'd been some 336s. You know, like a beam with a anchor bolt set up on the end of it.
Okay.
They had the anchor bolts in the, you know, drilled into the rock. Set that in there and concreted everything down.
Okay. That.
We built a jack and vise on the end of that with the first cord.
Okay. Was setting, let's see. Now you had to have a crane out there. You had to have, you know, the operator.
Yeah, starting off with a cherry picker.
Okay.
You know, the offload trucks and quite a little traveler. I think it was a 100 ton crane. And, that built a frame for it and set it up on some rollers that were had tracks on the cords. So we rolled out there.
Okay, so hang on a second. Let me see if I can understand this. When I think of a crane, especially a 100-ton crane, that's got a tower on it that, I don't know, is 100 feet high. They got a long tower. Maybe not 100.
I only had 90 foot of boom.
90 foot of boom. Okay.
There's no tracks on it.
Right.
Another frame. And it was just as wide as the bridge was. And we had these heavy duty channels we bolted to the cord, to the top cord. You know, that anchored around it. So we had Hillman rollers. Under that frame were guide rollers, and it sat on those cords.
Okay, so could the operator move the crane toward the river and away from the river on those rollers then?
It traveled on the rollers, but we just put a cable out there. To, I forget how far out. We'd put it in a snatch block. Like one of the further pieces out.
Okay.
Going back to, okay, so we have to go backwards.
Okay.
Trying to pull his own self up.
Got it. So you'd put a pulley out, a snatch block, put a pulley out front, and one in the back, one down by the tie back. And then that crane could pull itself forward, out toward the river, or backwards, back toward the tie back.
Correct.
Okay. That's clever. And could the crane operator see what the raising gang was doing?
Yeah, I mean, some of the low stuff it couldn't, because on that traveler it had a big deck. You know, it was nice. It sat up pretty high.
Okay.
And but it was like a big dance floor up there.
Okay.
It was a big deck, and you know we were up on the top cord, but we had set, you know, on down on bottom cord also. So as long as it was out in front of me, it could see pretty good.
But I imagine when you were first setting it up, down on that first section, he wouldn't have been necessarily able to see what was going on down there. Did you have a radio to communicate with him? How did that work?
Yeah.
Okay.
Radio, walkie-talkies.
Okay. Then it's easy because the distance is not too far.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you keep a journal at all?
I don't know if I kept one back then or not.
Okay. You just kind of wonder how long it took you to get the first section up. Off the skew back and then up, tied into the tie backs and then start moving out into the air.
I don't think I might have, but many times I moved, I'm sure I got lost somewhere.
Okay.
You ever talk to that, he was the engineer for that job for the state?
Jerry Cannon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cannon, right?
Yep. He lives in Tucson. Yeah.
That was a good guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's real knowledgeable. And
what do you remember about him?
He said it took him 10 years to get that bridge started.
Yeah. It did. What else do you remember about him?
About it, right there.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's right. It was 1984 they started working on that, getting approvals and all kinds of stuff. And there you were in 1994, 10 years later. Starting to put things down. Yeah. David, we've been yik-yakking here almost an hour.
All right.
I wonder if this is a good place to put a comma in this oral history.
Okay.
And we could pick it up again some days from now.
All right, sounds good.
Okay.
Maybe I can find my records.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would be neat. If there's some other bridges that you worked on before Navajo that you want to talk about a little bit, I'd sure like to listen. Yeah. Is there anything...
My little boy is working on down here in Tennessee. No.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to add to what we've talked about before we wrap this one up?
I'm sure when you call me back, I will.
Okay, good. Good. Well, with that, we'll conclude part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with David Mesh. Today is Monday, July 18th, 2022. My name is Tom Martin, and David, thank you so very much.
All right. Thank you, Tom.